We do. Okay. I got to hit.
Hi, everyone. I'm sorry I was late. Thank you so much.
Glad you're here. Yeah. Very glad you're
here. Thank you. I apologize, but I'm glad to be here.
You're here.
Okay. No problem. So we have a quorum. It is 4:12, and today is April 14th, 2022. And I'd like to call the ESAC meeting to order. So, roll call. Fred Ariza.
Here.
Margot Garcia.
Here.
Yolanda Herrera. Yolanda, are you here?
She's muted.
I'll have to go back because I need. Elvira Suarez Din is here.
Here. Late, but here.
Ryan Thomas.
Here.
And I'm Chris Yarder, present. Do I need to go back and get a hear from Yolanda, Brittany?
I'm here. I just pushed the wrong button.
Oh, okay. I understand. All right, item two, approval of minutes for March 10th, 2022. Did you see any corrections or additions?
I just had a question about the code enforcement. having written up the annual report and reading over the LARs there, and then in the minutes it says some other changes that were recently made were migrating the junked motor vehicles and weed complaints to the Tucson Police Community Service officers. And I believe that's not correct, that actually the changes were leaving the junked motor vehicles with the TPD and putting the weed complaints back to the code enforcement. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
So that sentence needs to be changed.
Okay.
They were recently made. We're migrating the weed complaint. No, it's really not migrating at all. We need to change that whole sentence. Recently made were leaving.
Okay, that works.
The junked motor vehicles with the community service officers and weed complaints to CE.
You get that, Brittany?
Yep.
Okay. Did anyone see anything else? Okay. We'll accept the minutes as corrected. Item three, chairperson's report. I know you guys were all dying to read this before you came to the meeting. If you just skim through it, I mean, did anything stand out? Did you see any grammar errors? Fred?
Yes, I saw something on page three under the financial subcommittee.
Okay.
I know my math isn't that good, but the sentence that starts with landfill operations ended. It's just below the headline. The amount there is.
Oh, there's a problem with a comma, isn't
it? Yeah, there is no comma.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it should have been another comma, sorry. Instead of a period.
Good catch.
Okay.
Yeah, my math isn't that good, but.
Right. The landfill operations would have been in trouble if they only had $1,463. Okay. Anything else?
Staff, are you going to make sure that that the numbers we put in are accurate? like in the code enforcement, in that same page down there, hiring 5 more inspectors in 2022? I mean,
there was a possible 5.
Okay.
For 2022. We'll see. I don't know if they had gotten 2 in 2021, right, Carlos? And then they're hiring. Are there applicants?
So the update on that is we had 2 vacant positions within the current budget, adopted budget. City manager's office approved additional 2 positions. So that will be a total of 4 new vacant positions that we needed to fill. On top of that, we also get an approval for an additional position to cover an extended medical leave. So we basically are actively recruiting for essentially for 5 positions. This week, we had interviews, which generated essentially 4 candidates for those 5 positions. But only 3 essentially will be extended offers. One of the candidates we had to pull off for the list due to some background stuff, background checks, and we just basically we generated a list for 4 individuals out of the 5. One of them, we're not going to be able to extend an offer due to some issues on the background. So we're going to move forward with filling 3 of those positions, 3 out of the 5.
Well, that's awesome. And then you'll still keep looking, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Margo, do you see anything else?
I didn't think we met virtually 11 times. I thought my number was smaller. It was like,
yeah, I know. I went back and checked that, Margo. A lot of the stuff isn't on the ESAC site. So I went through all my agendas for waste management and counted them. So, yeah, I thought we had done pretty good for our subcommittee in 2021.
Okay. If you think, I went and looked at, I counted LAR reports that were posted on the city clerk's office.
Yeah, but they're not all posted.
Okay.
So, yeah. Same with ESAC. So I just went through all my folders and gotten organized.
All righty.
Okay, let's move on to item 4.
Let's talk about the next steps. I mean, if there are no objections, this is what's going forward to the city clerk's office. Is that your intent?
Yes. Yes. So should I make a motion to?
I think it would be good to make. I can make that motion. I move that the
corrected
the corrected report that was emailed to people be accepted as ESAC's annual report forwarded to the clerk's office as required.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Okay. So the motion passes.
Okay.
And do these get posted on our site, Brittany? The annual reports, because I haven't seen any of the annual reports on the ESAC online site.
I thought they did, but when I've gone back to look, I don't think I've ever seen them. So I'm not too sure where they're actually housed.
Okay, so maybe they don't think that's something to put on the boards and commissions site.
I'd have to reach out to boards and commissions to find out where it's actually housed.
Okay.
Because it's changed in the past where there's been times where the chairperson would actually just physically go to mayor and council and speak to present verbally. So there wasn't always a written annual report.
Oh, well, I'm glad we do that now. Mm-hmm. So... okay, so let's go back to item 4. Thanks, Margo. Director's report, and Carlos, you're up.
Okay, thank you, good afternoon. So that item is really related to the past update. As you know, Mayor and Council adopted the removal of the glass from the curbside program back in November 17, 2020. But the program really became effective February 1st, 2021. And we've been basically at this for a little bit over a year. So February 1st, 2022 would have been essentially a year. So when you look, when we look at what was happening before, how many tons were essentially being diverted as part of the curbside program, we were essentially generating about from February of 20 to January 21st, 2021, we essentially diverted around 6,000 tons of glass into the blue bin. From January 2021 to January 2022, essentially a year out, we essentially have diverted still folks diverted in two different fashions, okay? About 4,300 tons, okay, a total. So when you look, when you contrast what was happening before, the 6,000 tons versus roughly about 4,300 tons, there's a 40% drop in terms of how much glass is being diverted. And then the breakdown, how that glass essentially is being generated, is being diverted, a good chunk of that, about 2,500 tons, it still goes into the blue bin, still going into the blue bin, and about 1,800 tons is going into the 22 drop-off centers, okay? So what? So that's in terms of the tonnage. That's essentially where we at. So just like any program, there is assumption. There were a lot of assumptions we made. One of the assumptions we made is essentially that folks will take a little bit of time on really transitioning from of using essentially the drop-off centers. And to our surprise, I think the public has well received that. It's on board with that program. And essentially is really moving, even though the numbers don't reflect that in the overall tonnage, but we're definitely are seeing about 45 tons of glass being diverted every month throughout those 22 sites. The other assumption that we made was that essentially that we would collect the glass, take it to Los Reales landfill. We essentially bought a little crusher so we can crush the materials, because we thought essentially it was gonna be easy enough to handle based on the tonnage. We would ramp up and then essentially we would be able to keep up with the volume. That has not been the case because the amount of glass that we have collected. So over time, we had essentially have accumulated roughly about 2,000 tons. And today it is a little bit higher than that of glass. That glass is being stockpiled at the landfill. The other assumption that we made was that we would, to keep the cost down, was that we wanted to use Department of Corrections labor to help us process that glass. That labor has not been available. And so and that's one of the reasons we haven't really processed that much glass. So at the same time, once essentially the program was essentially instituted or adopted, the council heard from a lot of, from the glass industry, from a lot of the glass recyclers, and said, city, you're not doing the best that you can do with the glass. And essentially we can come in and really provide you a different alternative on one, meeting your local glass reuse initiative, but also at the same time really maximize the value of the glass. So we were worried about the continuous stockpile of glass. And so obviously they reached out to us and we entered into what we call a temporary agreement with Strategic Materials out of Phoenix. And what that is essentially is they will essentially come and pick up the glass from the city landfill. We would help them load it up. They would essentially give us $5 a ton for the glass. They will go take it to Phoenix. They will process it. And in return, they would provide the city 10% of the overall tonnage that they take in a form of crushed glass that essentially that we can use to deploy and begin to use our local reuse program. Okay. So that's essentially where we at. We have not received the first load. We started on the program, I would say about a couple months ago. So we're in the process of one, getting paid for the initial loads, but also essentially trying to get our portion of the glass that is supposed to be getting back to us. Okay. But in the interim, so when you look at the cost of what the city was paying in 2020 as compared to what, or 2021 versus 2022, there has been about a monthly savings roughly to the tune of about $20,000 in tipping fees that we could directly associate with the glass. So as you know, that was one of the primary intents of really removing the glass is not really the cost of really the tipping fee because they're so heavy, but also how the glass essentially devalues the overall commodity pricing of the recyclables that we're trying to sell. And so that's where we at. So it's been, it has not gone, just in terms of how we predicted, how we made the assumptions, but I think in terms of the process and how we thought things were going to go, not only in terms of how the program was going to be accepted, adopted, how we were going to manage the program, and what is basically is occurring today. Okay, so our goal is obviously continue on the path of really collecting as much glass as possible, really going out there and reuse the glass, really transfer the glass to Phoenix, get our share of the glass in the interim, and continue to really to reduce our overall tipping fee expenses at the MRF. And we're going to continue to explore. One of the other options that came about of the glass industry reaching out to us is they have other business partners that they're interested in really deploying the collection of glass from various businesses. So we're working with them, and we're going to be working with Tucson Clean and Beautiful, most likely really to enter into an agreement what we would provide them a site where they would collect the glass from the various businesses, they would charge in separately for that service. They would essentially collect the glass, give us some revenue for that glass, and then they would essentially begin to recycle the glass. And that's really more to provide an alternative use or alternative diversion for glass for commercial businesses. So that is separate than what we do in the collection drop-offs. And so that program continues to be looked at. We have not received the formal proposal, and the company's name is being supported by the glass industry, glass recycling industry, and the company name is Glass King. And so if you Google them, Glass King, you'll see what they do, how they go about their business, what their business model looks like, and what the services they provide. They are in Chicago, they provide services in Phoenix, and there's in a few areas that they're operating. So that business model, they want to deploy that, obviously in partnership with us in terms of facilitating their entry into the market and providing them a pad where they can operate and provide the services to the community. So that's overall in terms of where we're at as we continue to embark on a couple things on our zero waste roadmap. Obviously, the considerations of saying, do we really want to still keep it outside the curbside program, or should we reincorporate that into the curbside program? Only if, and we're in the process of negotiating the agreement with Republic and saying, folks, there is a market value for the glass. We can prove to you that there's a market glass, that there's a market value. So can we, some of the glass is already going through you. It's still not being taken away from the curbside program because residents still continue to put it in there. Can we really develop a different scheme on how we treat the glass so that we really doesn't devaluate our overall tonnage? How do we do that moving forward? So that's something that obviously is being considered, will be considered as we move along this process. So that's kind of a very general view, general perspective of the glass. And again, moving forward is you're going to be part of an integral part of our zero waste roadmap moving forward, as well as an integral component of how we negotiate the agreement with Republic, the last amendment for the last 5 years where they need to operate out of that facility. So that's my room. Thank you.
Carlos, when you talk about providing them with a pad to collect it, we talked at the committee on waste diversion, collection, and education, that it's really hard for the big trucks to get around on 4th Avenue and down in the downtown area. And so what they would need is smaller trucks to collect that glass. Are you looking at a pad? You mentioned a pad for that collection. in that kind of area on city-owned property, or you're not sending them all the way to Los Reales to go down and then go back again? What are you thinking about from a geographic perspective?
So to your point, obviously, if we deploy our big trucks, they're very heavy, they're very difficult to maneuver in the downtown area, Fourth Avenue area. So the idea is for this operator, Glass King, really to deploy smaller trucks, I would say a one-ton trucks that are more portable, that are more accessible to service those restaurants, those businesses. And then really the idea is really to start off small in a close proximity to downtown, Fourth Avenue and the university area. So all the glass that they collect, what we're saying the pad is would be at Container Maintenance, which would be on South 10th Avenue and roughly 17th Street. And the reason for it, we already have some bunkers in there already that were still remain in place. So it's really just a matter of really providing the space so they can store the glass and then haul it away instead of really going all the way to Los Reales.
So you would see that as, you know, like in the old days where the little trucks came and put it into a compactor and then the bigger truck hauled it up. Is that more efficient on the long run, or put it on a train? We don't have a train to Phoenix.
So that, Ms. Margot, that will be really to make it profitable and really make it conducted to really to make sure that it's financially feasible. That's what that company Glass King thinks that they can do that. Okay. And if we provide them, essentially all they're asking us for us is, if we'll give you a price for the tonnage, we'll give you some dollars for the tonnage, not a whole lot, and really give you basically a way to store it. That's all they're looking for, and they can deploy the program themselves. So that way it would not be really something that the department will have to be responsible for or incur any cost of that. It really would be more of a business decision or business venture to make that happen. But just like anything else in recycling, there are some barriers to entry, and there's some subsidies and some help that they would need, and really giving them that area within that facility, that will be part of our help. But again, that's in line to the overall city's zero waste goals, that let's divert, let's try to recycle those products. So that's why I think there's going to be some of that the city will have to do if we really are very serious in meeting those goals.
So when you say, did I understand you correctly, that you say we would pay them a small fee for doing that collection? No,
we would not pay them to provide the service. Okay. So they would have to individually, just like any service provider, okay, or reach out to the individual businesses, offer their services, and give them the value proposition that they can bring to the table, that they can really be a sustainability partner, and really say, we can do this. Here's the cost. We're not going to charge them for that product. It's going to be a totally independent company that will provide essentially that service, but we would not pay the company anything for to do that service for the city or to do that. Yes.
So we would also then save the money of collections ourselves.
That's correct.
So yes, we're not running around and picking up those big overhead to put down. What about from the businessman's perspective? They're paying right now at a trash collection fee.
So what their business model looks like is they go into the business and the first thing that they do is you as a business owner, do you really want to be provide sustainable waste management services? And if the answer is yes, then here's a product that we can provide to you. Here's a service that we can provide to you. We can provide you the bins. We can provide you the services that at the end of the day, your tonnage is reduced. Your trash services should be reduced. And therefore, it's really a value to you to pay us whatever the fee is, $20, $25 a fee to provide you the service. But what you're doing is really providing a sustainable program. So we wouldn't be in the middle of that. It mm-hmm. would be them to essentially to make that case in front of the businesses.
So then we don't have a whole lot of commercial customers. But then to the extent that they've reduced the tonnage for glass, then we would reduce their fee to the city. They would pay less to the city.
potentially, if we service them, right? If we potentially provide that service, yes, we potentially could lose out on that tonnage. Okay, that is a possibility.
Yeah, but then we're not paying it to the MRF, and you know, there's the cascading effect.
Right.
And so Republic would have to, or whoever, Diggins or whoever else is servicing them, would then have to make those negotiations on their own with them.
That is correct. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so the other thing that we're looking at is really how we can provide more of a sustainable solution, or how a third party can provide a sustainable solution, and yet how do we market ourselves as a local choice, okay, and on providing those services and really not locking customers in to a long-term contract that is going to be very difficult to pull out. So and that's I see as an opportunity really to not only maintain or retain our current customers, but maybe the possibility of providing some alternative services that we're not providing along with the school services and more sustainable. And again, being the local choice of that. Because the other thing is that's occurring too is we're hearing and we're seeing that there's a lot of complaints for garbage service. And so a lot of residents or a lot of customers are not very happy. And when they call certain numbers, they don't pick up. Certain companies they don't pick up. And so there's a little bit of transition going to the city because they know that they know the president of the board, they know the local manager, and they know how do they get a hold of if the service is not being met. So a lot of businesses are doing that. And for us, it's a good thing because again, it's we're the local provider, we should be the local choice.
Carlos, this is Yolanda. I have a couple of questions. One for clarification, when you said something about Tucson Clean and Beautiful will be collecting the glass for environmental services at commercial businesses. And then the second part of this, my question is, how does any of this reduce the emissions that we were initially striving for?
So in terms of the function that Tucson Clean and Beautiful will play is we would have to go into a very long-term, I would say, procurement process really to select a person really to or a company to come in and provide those services for the city. So the way we have approached it is Tucson Community Beautiful is a nonprofit organization. It's a partner entity for the city. They have the ability to facilitate. We can enter into an agreement with Tucson Clean and Beautiful. We'll market an area at the transfer station where you essentially would partner with a third entity, I mean Glass King, to be able to provide this commercial diversion service. And if Tucson Clean and Beautiful needs to charge him a fee for that, then they can charge him that. That is really the mechanism. So it's not really Tucson Clean and Beautiful is not going to deliver, it's not going to pick up the bins. Tucson Clean and Beautiful is not going to market the product. Tucson Clean and Beautiful is not going to collect no fees. The only thing is we're using that partnership mechanism as a nonprofit organization, which is a partner of the city, to be able to essentially to deploy this additional opportunity as it relates to commercial customers. So as it relates to our emissions that we're trying, so the second question as it relates to reducing our emissions. So again, so it's really looking at it in two different perspectives. Okay, certainly it's not in line to what we had we were thinking, and the reason for it on the assumptions, and the reason the assumptions is because we have not had the ability really to process the glass the way we had intended or the way we had planned. But at the same time, by keeping essentially the glass continued to stockpile, I don't think would give the residents a good messaging that we're not really moving forward with the glass. It may be contrary in terms of really what the local reuse, and that's what we established essentially that mechanism, that we can still get a lot of the crushed glass delivered back to the city so we can deploy that. But we didn't want to continue to have the liability that we're stockpiling glass and not doing anything with it. And in terms of this Glass King proposal, this is an additional service that could help us divert additional glass that originally was not really intended really to be part of the blue bin, because the commercial is one thing and the blue bin is another one, because they're two separate programs. And maybe at the end of the day, there's a lot of commercial customers that may be essentially getting rid of their glass through the residential curbside program. And that was not the intent. And so this way would be is really eliminate that possibility of then transferring the glass to those locations, somebody to providing that service. Obviously there is a cost, but there's a benefit for them not to be handling the glass.
Okay, back to Tucson Clean and Beautiful. They're just gonna be doing the marketing for you? Is that what I'm understanding?
No, they're gonna be the mechanism, okay? We have an existing partnership agreement with Tucson Clean and Beautiful. We're gonna ask Tucson Clean and Beautiful. There is this company that can provide the service. We cannot contract directly with that company, okay? Because we have to go through our procurement process. But what we can do is we can enter into a partnership with Tucson Clean and Beautiful, and Tucson Clean and Beautiful can then sublease, enter into a separate agreement with a private company. And that's what we're trying to do. So.
Okay, so that helps me better understand what the bigger picture is. So thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. For item 5, the zero waste discussion, is that something that we need to be more definitive about monthly, or should we come up with some topics, or?
Maybe on that, I could just give you a brief update in terms of where we're at on the overall zero waste roadmap. Okay. And that's that is an ongoing activity. And there's multiple, I think there's up to 10, 11 tasks that are part of the zero waste roadmap. I think we're in task number 3 going into number 4. And so what those are is the initial task was let's identify what the tonnage looks like, what is the waste composition of the city. We didn't do a waste characterization study, but we did look at other entities and we said, okay, this is what I think the waste composition of Tucson is. So that has already been done. The other one was, the other task is really, let's look around and see essentially what other cities are doing, some comparable cities in terms of their programs or fees, how they approach essentially zero waste, comparable cities. And also, let's also look at some aspirational cities in terms of what are some of the programs that we had, what are some of the things to learn on achieving the zero waste goals. Then we're in the process of assembling what is called a request for information. And that request for information says, here's the concept, here's what the city's goals are to achieve zero waste by 2030, 2050, carbon neutrality. We have essentially an asset, which is the Los Reales landfill. We have some ideas in terms of how that can be deployed. We did some space planning at the landfill. Tell us, and here's the waste composition, okay? So now you, world, tell us what technology is available, what can we do really to achieve those zero waste goals, so that we can begin to incorporate that as part of the next step, reaching out to the various stakeholders, reaching out to the public and saying, hey, this is what we have so far. Give us your feedback, give us your idea, so that we can begin to develop the real programs to meet the zero waste roadmap. So that's where we're at right now. Okay, so we're again, task number 4 out of 12. The next step, really issue information, getting some feedback in terms of what technology, who may be interested in setting shop, what are the cost parameters, what do they need, so that we can begin to see if we meet those requirements or what we may need to do moving forward as we deploy or we set up our zero waste roadmap, our zero waste plan.
Thank you. All right, let's move on. You're up again, Carlos. Item 6 for the monthly finance report.
Okay. So if you look at page one on the documents that Vicky provided, the front page shows us essentially the revenue, the projected revenue versus actual revenue, and some of the adjustments that have occurred or going to be occurring for the next year or so. So the first one that just want to mention is landfill fees. And that's, we're projecting that we're going to be in the black in terms of projected revenue versus actual revenue. We're going to be in the black to the tune of about $1 million. Okay. So we still are seeing a lot of commercial activity from customers going into the landfill, seeing a lot of construction activity, a lot of demolition. So you're beginning to see that. And that's what's being captured in terms of the additional revenue that we're projecting. The same thing applies for self haulers. A lot of people continue to clean their houses. A lot of people continue to do a lot of improvements to their homes. So you're seeing a lot of activity at the landfill as well. So that's what you attribute it. Again, we're projecting that we're going to be in the black to the tune of about $700,000. Keep in mind that we still are not accepting cash. I know some other departments or some other cashiers have really began to accept cash. It has not been an issue for us. I think they're very seldom we get some complaints of that. Has really alleviated us, our cash handling processes. It really has helped us really manage our staff. So one of the things we're going to be proposing is really just to permanently allow us really to operate in that fashion moving forward, and probably institute down the road now that we have a new system, scale system, really to start kind of deploying the AutoPay or PayPal or something like that, that essentially we can certainly take advantage of that and not continue and not having the need really to move forward with cash transactions. We are projecting, you'll see in red, about $30,000 in HHW collection fees. Again, that's a result of really not being fully open throughout the year. I know we're getting started. We're having a lot of those weekend events. Some of them have been very well attended, that it really has not given us the ability really to charge county residents for that. That's part of it. Some of the businesses were shut down. But we're beginning to pick up some, giving them the service or the ability for them to drop off those hazardous materials. Not a significant hit. It was to be expected. We look at the additional revenue, miscellaneous revenue. We did receive additional dollars from ADEQ regarding the leaking underground storage tank that we had here at Thomas Price Center. That remediation is continuing, and we have not achieved clean closure yet, but the state is really fulfilling their commitment. They're going to help us out achieve that. So that was essentially the big pitter, the big contributor to that fund. So again, we're projecting, again, looking at the numbers, projected revenues versus projected expenditures, really to be in the black to the tune of about $2.7 million. When you look at that and you start looking at some of the things that we need to do down the road, we still need to start continue to invest on the purchase of trucks, capital outlay. There's been a little bit of delay on getting those trucks, so we may not capture seeing where all the expenditures are hitting. So even though we're seeing that we're going to be in the black, all it is really a lag that at one point in time is going to catch up to us to be able to pay for the vehicles that we have order or they're being delayed to be shipped to us. So even though it sounds good, I wouldn't really count on it, every single penny of it. Next slide, Brittany. The one that is making some remarks would be is you look at recycling and waste reduction. So we were projecting that we were going to be spending about $3.3 million in tipping fees. We certainly, the glass has really taken some effect. I think so I'm not saying all of it is that way. I think what is really making up the big difference is that the commodity pricing out there for the recyclables has improved. So when you tally up the processing cost, or when you tally up the revenue associated with selling those commodities, you deduct essentially the tipping fees and stuff like that, then that's where you essentially the invoice is relatively small as compared to what we're doing about a year and a half ago. And that's where you see the improvement on that. So, and that's what I think is going to help us out, move things forward as we move along. The next item I'd like to mention is Los Reales Engineering and Operations. We are seeing increases in our diesel cost. Every single piece of equipment out there, heavy equipment, is diesel, so we don't even have CNG. And so we're taking a hit on that. The other thing we're being is hitting us too as well is you've seen it's been very windy some weeks, very heavy winds. Litter control has been really tough for us out there. We're filling up on the top, and so when we do that, wind really works against us. We still want to be a good neighbor, but still we have not been able to keep up, and so there's times that we spend a lot of time and effort on cleaning up that area, and then the following day just goes back to the same thing. But we got to stay on it. We got to do that, and unfortunately that is really a cost of doing business. But that's essentially a cost. So as I remember, some of the numbers we're looking at that, we're looking at a couple contracts anywhere between $300,000 to $400,000 just in litter control. So when you contrast that, okay, to paying a crew of 10, 15 individuals at $1.75, it's a huge difference in terms of what we're paying for those services. Next page. I don't think there's nothing worth noting on the following pages. Maybe the only thing I can say is looking at where we think we're going to be at is again looking at being in the black overall. But again, it's probably a delay on that because of really some of the capital outlay purchases. Next slide, please. We are making some progress on our capital outlay programs, capital improvement program. So for our operators, their bathroom and locker remodeling project hasn't started, but it's all design has been completed. All the permits have been completed. Notice proceeds and purchase orders have been essentially issued. We're hoping to essentially get to have that work completed. We're estimated at the end of September. So we're calling it October 1st to be able to have all that work completed. Removing all of all the commodes, the urinals, stalls, AC units, adding more AV units, having essentially the ability really to use it as a real muster room, doing some remodeling in the offices. So I think it really should really improve significantly where the operators essentially report and both when they come in as well as when they go home. The other project that is ongoing and we already issued the purchase order to buy the bunkers to store some of the hazardous materials. That's already in place, so that order is in progress. We have obtained the permits for the HHW facility already. We have issued the notice to proceed and the purchase order for that work. So it's really probably going to be a matter of a month or so for the contractor really to mobilize and get that moving. Los Reales Gas, we haven't had no progress on the container maintenance top C relocation. We're in the process of really finalizing the request for proposals for the landfill gas reutilization project. We finished a kind of internal review this week. So we'll do another review just to make sure procurement, everybody's on board next week. So hopefully our goal is really to put it out on the street at the end of April and see what kind of responses do we get. Mentioned last time that our computer upgrade of Osiris is done, is working fairly good. The next project would be the CNG third natural gas compressor. That work is almost 90% complete. Doing some final piping modifications and programming, but the vast majority of the work is essentially done. Los Reales landfill cell, we have obtained the aerial about a month ago. There essentially have put all the information together as it relates to permits and things like that. So I estimate that we're about 30% complete on the design, on getting essentially that project going and get it implemented. We are running out of room in terms of areas where we can dispose. So we may have overfilled in some areas, but we just have to, we're looking at that as we speak. So with that, I think that's all I had to cover on the financials, unless you have any specific questions.
Does anyone have questions? Good.
Nope, I don't have any.
Margo, you're muted.
Sorry, I didn't want you to hear the telephone to ring. I guess I'm still up about the Congress landfill excavation. Any money coming back yet from that? I guess they haven't sold the property yet, so we don't have money coming in from Rio Nuevo.
So, Ms. Margo, that discussion came up recently during, I believe last week during our budget briefing in the city manager's office. He is trying to, as the council, really to, if there is no discussion, no conversation about fees for at least for the next coming year, that, and there is some general fund balance, is really for the general fund really to start partially paying for essentially for that investment now. And so he has reminded them of that. They are aware of that. But in terms of really when that, I think it's probably a good approach, as we may be seeing the money coming in sooner rather than later, rather than to wait for that facility to be closed. So I think there is some possibility that we may start getting some money funneled into us in very shortly, even as part of this fiscal year's budget.
Okay, good. You haven't forgotten about it.
No.
Good. We haven't forgotten about it.
Any other questions? Well, all I request is we get another field trip to see cell 4B when it's when it's almost up and running, because we have new people and I'm sure they would really enjoy that. So,
see the linings.
It's very educational. All right. Thank you. Item 7. Margo, do you want to update us on our last meeting? Because it was good.
It was good. We got a lot. We went through a lot. We met on April 6th with all three members present. The MRF report was a disappointment. We're back to paying the MRF for February, $43,672.28. The reason is the drop in prices for the commodities. HDPE natural bottles are down to $840 a ton from $1,975 a ton in September. So that's a big drop. Aluminum is up at $1,912.29 a ton. The rest have small variations in price. Glass remains at about 7% by weight of the materials collected. Overall, in February 2022, the average tonnage decreased by 18.7% from what was collected in January. With less tonnage, there's less trash and less glass. That has resulted in a decrease by 42% of the payment to the MRF compared to January. So January's payment was in the $70,000 range. So that's a good direction. Keep going down. There are several amendments to the contract with Republic. one in which we gave them a lot of leeway to deal with the big downturn in commodity prices. The prices have rebounded, and now it's time to recoup some of that money. New negotiations are starting since the current amendment ends June 30th. One of the topics will be how the trash residue is figured. It may be that we're not doing it correctly. Are the belts running too fast and the pickers are missing recyclables? There are 5 years left on the master contract. In 1 year, if ES is to build their own MRF, it will be time to start the planning for what kind of MRF, how it will operate, and other such issues. You'll remember there's a plot of land at Los Reales set aside for the new MRF. ES and Republic are meeting in 2 weeks. We should have a report on that meeting at the next WDCE subcommittee meeting, and to know where that's going. And you heard a little bit of reference to that also with regards to glass and what's happening there and how the glass is being pulled out and what the impact is on our contract with Republic, who's running the MRF these days. Well, I think I can jump over the glass. In general, you heard that we have this new idea. There's a new idea of SMI coming to Phoenix to pick it up, paying us $5 a ton. And why was Republic saying there was no market for that glass? One of the things is, Carlos just mentioned briefly, that the glass crusher that we bought is actually way too small for the amount of glass that we're collecting. So the machine, we need a machine that can crush 10 to 15 tons per hour, which costs about $200,000 to $250,000. And the one that we bought only crushes 2 to 5 tons per hour. So you can see that's one of the reasons things have stockpiled, in addition that it took a while to get everything set up. Also, there is the issue of, we originally, I think, as Carlos mentioned, we're thinking that to use Department of Corrections workers for that job, and they're not available, so the cost is also more. And you heard the discussion already about Glass King going amongst the businesses and the concentration of businesses, of bars and restaurants in the campus, 4th Avenue, and downtown area, which is where they probably would go. We talked a little about the education fee that has been used to support EEE, who is Environmental Education, and I forget what the third E stands for. And they're the company that we hire to go around to the schools to do education, and we get some money from the MRF paid towards that that cost. This school year to date, they have done 195 elementary school presentations, either in person or in Zoom, and 30 middle school presentations. They're needing to rebuild relationships in the schools, as many of the teachers that they worked with in the past have retired. And so they're having to look, though they seem to be plenty busy. They are consciously working at talking with the newer teachers. And during the closure, EEE developed an activity booklet with a teacher's guide and also videos. So that's an option for the teachers as well. April 16th, which is this coming Saturday, will be a zero waste event at the Tommy Price Center. There will be shredding, collections of textiles, e-waste, books. Bookman's is coming down to take books. Prescription drugs, the police department will be there, and or the fire department, and plastic pill bottles, the brown little brown bottles that should be have their labels removed and be rinsed. Publicity for this will go out over social media, neighborhood nugget, news releases, and all the vendors who are coming to take this stuff are also sponsors. So we're hoping that they're using their publicity methods, their outreach. April 25th is Earth Day at the Children's Museum, and the ES will participate there. TreeCycle was a success, but there's no numbers on the amount collected as the trucks just picked up the materials at the site and took it to be chipped and composted. In the past, we often figured out how many trees there were by the volume, but this year that wasn't done. When asked if the increased price of gas could trigger the gas surcharge again, back in the I forget what years it was, when the gas was rising very rapidly before, I guess in the aughts, there was a gas surcharge started, and it went up, and then as the gas price fell, it went down again. But what's interesting is that all residential trash collection trucks are in CNG, and 75% of the commercial trash trucks are on CNG. So we're not getting impacted so much by this increased price of gasoline and diesel, though we just heard from Carlos that it is impacting the landfill, their costs. There's not been a big increase in price for the CNG. If there was, then maybe we would look at the gas surcharge again. Other departments are struggling with the increase in the gas costs. So that was another good reason to go to CNG. Phoenix has bought an electric trash truck at the cost of $675,000. CNG trucks are about $400,000 per truck. The chassis are the same. The cost is in the batteries. In addition, there is all the infrastructure needed for such a switch: charging stations, mechanics retrained, and routes reconfigured to handle the distance the batteries can take before recharging. A truck body is good for about 6 to 10 years. The batteries last 30 years, so there's an imbalance, and there's some need to work on that, as we understood from Pat Tapia. So there's no rush right at the moment to go to electric trash trucks. We do sell our old trucks, and we get, I think last year, $600,000 about from old trucks being sold. So it's been a regular ongoing effort by the city to sell them. And again, if we went to electric trucks, then we have to develop a whole new market again for the people who would buy them. They would have all the problems and infrastructure and so forth. So it's being thought about, but there's no immediate plan for it. We heard that the proposal is about to go out for the methane gas generated by the landfill, how that's going to be reused. And you heard Carlos mention that. Lori reported on code enforcement. The customer service spot is vacant. 3 temps have been trained on how to handle the job, and they're finally getting caught up on complaints. Code enforcement has also been working with the attorney's office to develop a new process for absentee landlords. If there's a vacant and neglected structure, code enforcement can go straight to citation. Frequent offenders are also going straight to citation, and that is getting landlords' attention, as well as frequent work done without permits. So they're trying to shorten down some of those processes, and hopefully the attorneys will agree to that, and things will move forward. We also learned that InterGov is going to be up and running in August. We heard that last year, and we heard that the year before, so I'm not real hopeful. But the problem is that the project is under the direction of the Planning and Development Services Department. And apparently there's so many different subroutines or small calculations that are being done for the Planning and Development Services, that kind of the database management, which is what code enforcement's doing, is not getting, I guess, the attention. The inspectors have relatively new laptops, so the switchover should go easily once the program is functional. And I guess it'll happen when it happens. The next meeting is scheduled for May 4th. So that's the report. As you can see, there were lots. Yolanda, Chris, anything to add?
Nope, you covered it. All right. I'm just going to mention again that environmental engineering hasn't been able to meet for what, almost a year, because there's only Fred. So is there anybody on this committee that would be interested in joining that subcommittee?
What exactly does it do?
I did a report. Did you read through the yearly report? And that kind of gives you an idea of the things that they go through. Fred, did you want to say anything?
Yeah, I need, you know, I would like to extend an invitation to whoever wants to become included on this, at least one other person, so I can have a quorum.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting, you know.
It is.
Because we got to go on that field trip to the Pump and Treat. And
I never got a chance to go there.
Wander around and stuff. So
it deals with all the different pieces of land and projects going. So some of the landfill stuff we've started hearing, Carlos has been sharing it with all of us since there's no group to specifically vent that. A little bit of it shows up in in waste diversion and collections because mm-hmm. of the collections aspect. So you're looking at the landfill. The thing that we don't really deal with at all in the other committees is all of the remediations that are going on, such as the Silver Bell Pump and Treat, right. Kinder Morgan. You heard about, mentioned Tommy Price remediation in the budget discussion. That means that the groundwater has become polluted as a result of leaking underground storage tanks with the wonderful name of Lust. And anyway, that... There's a lot that goes into that when we...
Fred, when do you guys meet? Or when are you supposed to meet?
Well, we're supposed to meet once a month. And
actually, the Environmental and Engineering Committee met quarterly. Mike, they always scheduled the meetings based on the members' schedule.
Oh, so, okay.
It was pretty flexible. There wasn't a set time or a specific date that met. They would just call.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and throw my hat in the ring for that one.
Okay.
I approve. You're throwing your hat in the ring.
Thank you, Mike.
So now do you guys, does Rolanda set up those meetings, Brittany?
Rolanda actually took a promotion to another department. So for the time being, I'll have Lucy schedule those meetings and work with Frank to set that agenda.
Okay. So when you guys decide on scheduling and what works for you, then get in touch with Brittany.
Right. I'll reach out to Frank and Lucy to let them know we now have two members on the committee. I'll talk to Frank about compiling items for agenda to hold a meeting soon. Okay. And then we'll email Fred and Mike separately to find out the best date and time.
Okay. Perfect. That sounds good. All right. So finance only met once last year, and there's two of us. We don't really have a chair for that. So if anybody's interested in that.
Yeah, Ryan was on that with us. I thought it was three of us, you, me, and Ryan.
No, that's just wishful thinking.
I was just going to say that's wishful thinking.
Oh,
yeah, that's wishful thinking.
Elvira, what about you?
Sure, I can join.
Did you mention that before? About
yeah, I think I did.
Yeah,
I don't know if I was getting any of the invitations because I haven't been receiving them, but I do think I said yes to a committee.
Okay, yeah, you're right. I remember that now. I'm sorry. So
I'm sorry for not I'd be happy to join.
I definitely
approve. I just haven't been receiving anything.
Yeah, I approve you joining. And you know, we did just meet that once, so maybe we need to see about scheduling coming up. What would May work? Or
well, the budget is in process. Right before. I don't know how much. When is the budget the first adoption?
I believe it's May. It's a tentative budget or the manager's budget. I think it's going to be presented May 3rd.
Okay. So any date after that, Margo?
Well, the problem is that by the time the manager's budget is set, there's very little influence you can have over, you know, not that we necessarily would have anything. We've just gone through the budget and it seems like things are pretty much in line. We don't see any great need, but I don't know. When is the cost of service work being talked about, Carlos?
So we had our initial kickoff meeting last week. We probably won't see the initial results of that until probably the end of July. We probably will be discussing that July, probably before it's finalized. I would say maybe June timeframe. Maybe we'll just set up a time for that before it's finalized.
I think June would be good.
Okay.
The cost of service is often very enlightening and very a place where there's some really policy issues to think about in terms of how things are structured and how they're allocated.
Okay. So Brittany, will you email us and see if we can agree on a date
in June?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay, here we go. Item 8, elections. So the floor is open for nominations for chair and vice chair. Do we start with chair first?
Usually.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So are there any nominations for chair?
I nominate Chris for chair. She's done a good job.
I second the nomination for Chris.
Okay. Is this where I have to say all those in favor?
You have to close the nominations.
The nominations. Well, there's no discussions, right?
Right. The question is,
I keep saying this is going to be my last year. So maybe when we get two more people on ESAC, there'll be someone that'll be willing to jump in. So, okay. So
all those in favor.
The nomination. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thanks. You know, we lost Lelia and she was our vice chair. Are there any nominations for vice chair?
Well, I nominate Mike. He's been on before. He has, you know, some experience, a little bit of time with us. Yolanda's been on a long time, but Yolanda, I would nominate you, but you're on so many things.
That's exactly right. I'm overextended.
So
anyone else? Basically you just step in for me if I'm not there. Right?
I'll accept it. I'll accept a nomination.
Yeah, I'll second it.
Okay.
Ms. Alvita.
All right. Any other nominations? No. Okay. So we'll close. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Moving on to item 9, ESAC bylaws, and I definitely don't want this meeting to go over 5:30 since our meeting last time was really late. But I was just panicking about never making quorum. And so I looked through our bylaws and I did some investigating and there was actually an ordinance that was agreed upon February 15, 2005, Mayor and Council Ordinance expanded the number of members from 7 to 13, further defined the membership criteria, expanded the scope of functions and purposes, and removed the sunset date. We don't have to do anything about this right now, but my concern was that the city manager is able to nominate six people. And I can't remember the last time all six of those positions were ever filled. And so that all factors into us making quorum. And so we have to have seven. So there's just no leeway. I know it's probably not going to be a problem if we get the two new members. When I wrote Anna Marufo with the city clerk's office to try to find out what needs to be done, she said that if the members vote to change the composition of ESAC, the recommendation to the mayor and council will need to be submitted by EGSD. As a supporting department, you guys would have to take care of the logistics to make this change if approved. We will make the change once the creating ordinance is amended to decrease the number of members if approved by the mayor and council. So, you know, the whole process is, you know, I didn't realize that it was actually an ordinance. So what do you think? Anybody have any thoughts? Let it go, pursue it.
Well, I was trying to remember because I think I was on at the time that happened, what our thinking was, and I must admit I don't remember.
2005, you probably were.
I've had two different terms, so it's not been continuous. I was off for 2 years as required. I think the idea was to get a broader array of skills that the manager could pick, an engineer could pick some others. And it seemed like very hard to give direction to the mayor and city council to do that. I think what we found in the end was that the city manager just wasn't very high on his to-do list. And so we've struggled instead with even trying to get him to point people. Though I must admit, it's still very frustrating that Ward 4 and the mayor's office have not appointed the people that they could for influencing. I thought maybe for a while we were going to get someone from the mayor's office, but so far nothing has happened. At any rate, I think that the larger number makes it hard to pull the quorum off when you don't have the city manager's attention.
Well, I was thinking, you know, even if you reduced it by two and had the city manager, you know, appoint four, that's more realistic.
What is
I was just going to ask how many currently on this committee are representing the city manager's office?
I know it's me and
Margo. Oh yeah, I didn't get a new list. I haven't gotten a.
I think I'm city manager too.
You're city manager.
Yeah, there are two, Mike and me.
What's the greatest number that you've seen since you said that all six have never been filled simultaneously?
I'd have to go back through and look.
I think there's been one point.
Brittany?
I think we've had a full ESAC committee before. If not, it was one member, and I think that one member was like maybe Ward 2 or 4 that was vacant. But that was long ago.
That's what I thought. And you know, people's lives change from 2005 to 2022. So,
well, it used to be it was a way for people who were interested, who wanted to serve, and the ward office already had person. And so usually you just applied to the director, or you asked the director if they would nominate you, and then the director sent it to the city manager, and usually went through in a matter of, you know, 2 months or 3 months. It's not been the year that we've seen in the past. So I think it doesn't hurt to have a couple, you know, to cut it down by two, which would make our quorum at least one less than we need.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, that's what I was, when I was looking at it, I thought, you know, that would really help us out a lot. And I don't know, when was the last time there were 13 members? I mean,
it's been a while.
It's been a long time. Is this something that we should just still discuss, Brittany and Carlos, or?
Can I just make a suggestion before you move any changes? Can we get some kind of notice or media release to Neighborhood Nugget to see if there are others out there in the whole Tucson region that don't know about this because of lack of publicity?
Well, actually, the city manager's office has sent out to Neighborhood Nugget before. I can ask them to do it again. So
I would do that. Just if we're looking at diversity, then that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
But and just, you know, give it one more shot. And then after, if nothing moves forward, then take a look at it again.
And then, you know, we still don't have an appointment from the mayor, and we still don't have an appointment from Ward 4. And I think Ward 4 has tried. They just don't seem to be in a ward where people want to volunteer.
Yolanda, do you have any sway with the mayor?
What?
I hope I was on mute when I laughed.
I mean,
sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. It just depends on what someone's needs are.
Yeah. Right. I sent email messages to her chief of staff asking them to do that because he had been her campaign manager and I worked with him in that context and thought I might have some in, but
I send emails and I never get a response. So
I know that too.
So I don't know quite what to do. So
maybe a letter to the editor wouldn't hurt to nudge a few people.
Well, I've thought about that.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I don't know why you couldn't do something like that.
No, that's fine. And a friend of mine, you know, complained in a letter to the editor, about the whole BCC process.
That was a good letter.
It's not just us that's suffering. You know, there's all sorts of boards and commissions that can't make quorum because they're not getting support from mayor and council and the city manager. So, I know Trigg tried to get that taken care of a few years ago. So, anyhow,
I have a question.
Should we just discuss?
I think, Chris, you had mentioned that you had a few folks that you were recommending. Did those folks already get appointed? Or does anyone have anyone that they would recommend? Because then maybe, oh, go ahead.
Well, Carlos, you got the two new applicants, right? And how were you able to do that?
So essentially, as part of conversations of the Zero Waste Roadmap, one of the consultants happened to be a neighbor of one of our staff members, made the connection, and that's what essentially she was able to recruit her into the mix. The same employees, Lisa Rotello, also has a good working relationship with Trevor from the UVA, and she was able to convince him really to get on board. So those are the contacts that she made, and obviously we move forward on making the recommendation.
So okay, because I'm wondering if anyone here had anyone in mind that they could convince to volunteer. Because then I used to work kind of, I met Margo actually through that campaign. So I do feel like if we just had someone and then gave them a person and asked them do this, that may be easier to get it done. But I just don't have anyone in my world. I've tried my best.
Well, I have someone that I talked to and she turning me down, but I think if she got a request from the mayor or from a city council person, it might be different. And she's in Ward 4, so that would be really good. She's a very committed person to to sustainability. So she would certainly bring in that perspective. So I'm going to work on her a little more.
Yeah, let me ask a question for a clarification. It was my understanding you don't have to live in the ward you're representing.
That's right.
So maybe that needs to be put out there as well. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll get others that, you know, from Ward 1 that want to serve, but they think that that position is already filled from Ward 1, not knowing that they could serve under the pleasure of Ward 4 or the mayor's office or the city manager's office.
Well, maybe we could get, I could write something up and see if Neighborhood Nugget would put that out, or would Brittany, would I have to go through you on that?
I'd have to reach out to Christina. I've never done a Neighborhood Nugget. She's our PIO, public information officer.
Any other thing, any other places where we could?
I have a suggestion.
Yes.
I know with my job, we often go to the Tucson neighborhood associations, and I know the wards go to them, and you know, the ones that are in their ward. And so maybe I can reach out, or whatever the process may be, maybe just directly talking to the neighborhood associations and seeing if anyone would like to volunteer, because they're already willing to volunteer. You know, so maybe this is another opportunity.
Yeah, and they are on the Neighborhood Nugget list that goes out to all the neighborhood associations.
Perfect. It doesn't hurt to have to do it several times. I mean, you know, just think how many times we hear an ad before it actually permeates our heads. So I think, Elder, I think you have a good idea. I would encourage you to, if you know people in doing that, speak up and tell them about how wonderful we all are, what fun it is.
I will definitely, actually, I'll let you all know. I think that would be, I can easily do that with a few of my neighborhood associations.
Good.
I know other folks in my office do too, so I'll kind of give them the note too, see if that works. Helps.
I know a lot of neighborhoods are not meeting in person still in the last 2 years. But another thought would be to reach out to the presidents anyway and ask them to do a little blurb in their annual newsletter. Mm-hmm. Let them know that there's an opportunity to serve.
Okay.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. So would that just be BCCs in general, or just specific for ESAC?
Oh, let's be selfish. Just ESAC.
I like to be selfish. Selfish.
Good one, Margo.
I've got my loyalty in the right place.
Oh, okay.
I think that'd be great. I'm wondering who can help me, because I would like to do it to all of the city, not just the ones, you know, I go to. So maybe staff, I don't know who would be best to maybe help one of us to send that
Carlos.
Out.
Yeah, Carlos.
And I have an email that you could copy.
Okay, perfect.
Well, I think when you put that out there, you should also just add a little bit of what we do. It's not just all work, that we do have fun. We have tours. We have, we get out, ribbon cutting ceremonies, and we have an opportunity to meet so many other people that are working for the betterment of Tucson.
And for the whole zero waste thing, I mean, pretty important. Okay, good ideas. We'll get going. Yes.
If I may suggest, but maybe let us kind of put something together. Let me work with Christina, put something together, put like some sort of a pamphlet or an information, packet or whatever it is. So that way it really provides a comprehensive approach in terms of really what we're doing, what ESAC is all about, what are some of the things they've done, what are some of the things we're doing, some of the things are coming up in the future. So that way it gives it more of an overview of what's going on, and rather than just saying, hey, serve in this committee. So maybe
sounds
we can
good.
Graphics, we can do that. And then we can always use that for other purposes. So let us work on developing that. And then obviously bring it back to you so you can take a look at it, make some edits, And then however we distribute that is general, whether we put it in the Nugget, whether we put it in a neighborhood association, whether we put it on Facebook, whatever it is, mm-hmm. then it's basically is in general. So that way we're saying the same thing over and over, and it may resonate with folks in terms of what the need or really those members and really what their role of participation would be in the benefit for us and for them as well.
Okay.
Well, Carlos, here's a thought. Can you get this done by Saturday and hand it out to all the people that are going to be dropping off their hazardous waste and their clothing and their shredding, you know, or at least put an A-frame saying volunteers needed for ESAC?
We'll try to do our best. Yes.
Should we call Christina and she'll go, oh, no, not something else to do.
No pressure.
Okay.
Well, just don't make me go and beg. I don't.
Well, I would appreciate an idea as to when we could expect that information, because my wife actually puts together the newsletter for our neighborhood. And with that information, it would be a lot easier for us to solicit, good people to participate in something like this.
Okay. That's great. Item 10, any future agenda items?
I just wanted to, at our education subcommittee meeting, I had given Pat a long list of issues of concerns. Carlos, I don't know if he shared that with you. Perhaps maybe you two can look at it and do some kind of a future agenda item for some of the concerns that I had on that list.
Okay.
Specifically the mobile food trucks that are just popping up on every single corner and, you know, laying asphalt and making it a permanent structure instead of a movable.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Okay, item 11. I don't think anyone wants to make a call to audience. So let's go for item 12, adjournment, 5:39. So we're only 9 minutes over. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you guys.
We'll see you.
Happy Easter. Happy Passover.
Happy spring.
Happy spring.
Enjoy this weather before we get hit.
Yeah, before it gets too hot.
Yeah. Bye. Thanks.
Thank you all.